said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Brian Hurst. How you doing, Brian?
Finger guns. What's up? Me and Joe dressed alike accidentally, but we're leaning into it. We're just not going to pretend it didn't happen. We're doing it. We both got free t-shirts, free for buying too many DVDs, Blu-rays, whatever.
And it's just you and me. Every time I'm like, hey, man, there's a sale, you and me are the only ones are like, yeah, no, I got something. Everyone's always like, I'll get it on the next one. I'm just like,
Yeah. Oh, maybe next time. There's never a next time.
You know what? It's a good sale, too. It's a Scream Factory one.
Absolutely.
Which are rarer than your Criterions and shit. Although...
yeah, they're more like... it's more like a once-a-year kind of thing with them, right?
Yeah, although I did get this Halloween complete series on Facebook Marketplace for like $35 less than its value.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really good.
That out-of-print Scream Factory shit is
expensive. The full, like, all seven movies?
Seven. It's whatever up until Rob Zombie's two.
Up through... it has the two Rob Zombies on it also. So all it's missing is the three new ones.
And I have those.
Yeah, nice.
On them.
You have ends? Did you get ends already?
Yeah, I needed to complete it. I have all the slips and all that shit. It had to be clean.
It'd be nice and clean.
Yeah. Anyway, what have you been up to? I mean, this week, just right off the top, we're talking about Maximum Overdrive. But before we really get into that,
I'm really putting my foot in it. I really came in and was like, I'm the co-host. We're doing some shit that I want to do.
Yeah,
this is one of those. This has been like lurking around me for years. You know, like people know me. You know that like I've been like kind of teasing about doing this one for a long time. So I'm excited. I'm excited to get back to it.
I've seen it before, and I wait a little bit for really we just dive into every photo. But in the meantime, though, and this would be we're recording like in March, but I think by the time this actually releases, it's like end of April or even May. What have you watched? Like anything you've watched recently that have stand out to you in the genre?
Oh, I saw Scream 6.
Yes, Scream 6. That's about the most recent thing for myself, too.
Theatrically, you know, as far as theatrical releases go, I went and saw that one. I know Cabin, as of recording, I haven't seen Knock at the Cabin yet, although it is available on Peacock now. I want to see that. I did watch Megan, finally. That was a lot of fun. They had the unrated cut on Peacock, which I think... like a lot of people's big complaint with that one was the PG-13-ness of it, and that it didn't kind of. And I think the unrated cut helps some of that. So
okay, I saw Megan in theaters, and I didn't even like. It was so well done that the PG-13 wasn't even complaint.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that's one of the only things I saw people complaining about was like they should have gone for it more. They should have, you know, really made it like gone a little crazier and. I think that was a small complaint, even from those people. I don't even feel like that was like a big problem for them.
I picked up Megan unrated, and I'm gonna watch it because I haven't seen it since theaters. And same thing, you nailed it. Knocked at the Cabin Door, gotta watch it on Peacock. Scream 6. I mean, at this point, it's been out for a while, but ton of fun. I think a lot better than its predecessor.
Five. Initial reaction, I liked it better than Scream 5, but I also like Scream 5. The first time I watch it better than when I rewatched it.
Same.
So I feel like I need to give Scream 6 a second watch before I can really land on it.
I've
thrown up Twitter rankings like, I don't give a shit. That was
immediately.
Meaningless.
I hope.
We're meaningless. Nobody gives. Nobody cares.
I hope that Scream 6 is the same thing about 5 is. I watched it. I loved it. Saw it in theaters and I saw it like 3 more times. And now I'm like, the movie's real mid. I hope Scream 6 and its rewatch. That it's just as fun and it holds its own like the first four screams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
There are definitely things I liked better about it, even just initially, so we'll see. But like I said,
I liked
it's a screen movie. It's a sixth movie in a franchise. They're only ever so good.
Yeah, know? I liked its divorce from Sydney, too. I thought that was really strong. Those characters are strong.
You know what I want to see? I was thinking about this. What I'd like to see in the next movie is all the, like, copycat Ghostface out in the world that aren't considered real. You know, there's in a world where Ghostface is this famous, there have been murders that people have committed as Ghostface that aren't counted as these like nine specific. It's like, why am I not Ghostface? These people aren't even attacking Sidney Prescott anymore. Why can't I get a? Like, why am I not a canonical Ghostface? I murdered six of my friends.
I committed the Ghostface murders in Tennessee.
Right, I'm the Tennessee Ghostface. Why don't I get my like where's my shrine? Where's my special mask?
Yeah. I feel like where they're going to do the city jump, cuz it seemed to work so well. Like go to different places, the different places that seemed to
They've done LA. Scream 3 is Scream LA.
LA, New York. I don't
That's
know.
Really we'll the see. Only. I mean, I guess they did a college. Just it was just like a bland.
What if we get Scream? What if it was super corny? We called something like Scream Break, and it was just like
You know what? I'm into that.
Scream Break, Kill Coon.
Like you got a Ghostface in a bikini,
mm-hmm.
like. And not giving away that it's a man or a woman, like the bikini is over the robe, so it still could be anybody.
No, it's one of those robe bikinis with the body on it, like
right. The long it's curve. Printed at the body, so like, yeah. like airbrushed on the front yeah. of the robe. like you get down at the shore.
It's like there's some cleavage airbrushed into it. It would be a serious. It would be a serious version of Club Dread.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much what you're looking at. Absolutely.
Oh man. All right.
Or just a less funny version.
This is why film going away is such a bad thing. Is we haven't talked, except for in DMs.
Oh, that's true.
This consistently since we recorded last. So I have. I'm like, I haven't talked about Scream 6 with you. I need to talk. So that's the top of this episode. But moving on. Maximum Overdrive. Brian, you kind of alluded to it. Why did you pick it? And give me a little background of like where we're at and you and my relationship to this movie.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I know you've done, you know, when you have guests on, and I've did it on my first episode. You guys do horror origin stories, and I have like a couple. You know what I mean? Like I think everybody does. You have like your, I would say, and this like slides into my top four or five. Like, so I'm staying at a friend's house, right? They live in an apartment, and it's kind of like almost like project style, but like not big city projects. Like, you know, lower
it's
income,
like, it's
a
like,
bunch of buildings
what's it called?
That
like,
look the same,
like row housing kind
of. Like, yeah, kind of like that. A bunch of two story buildings that look the same that are built in like a square, so okay. they have like a little place in the center. And you know, stay over at his place. There's a nicer like condo building and that has a pool, and we like can sneak in the back door and we swim in their pool until we get kicked out. And then we come back and his mom has rented Nice Dreams, Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams.
Okay.
And Maximum Overdrive. And it was the first time I had ever seen it. And it's just one of those like seminal kind of, again, I saw so much horror at other people. My family were big into movies, but not horror people. So yeah. A lot of my, you know, almost all my horror outside of the Child's Plays is like places I watched at friends' houses and at sleepovers and stuff like that. And this one is like right in there and is stuck with me. And like, I've always kind of known that it wasn't beloved. It's cult, but it's even like niche cult.
I think
you know
it's
what I
niche
mean?
Cult.
It's got a smaller cult following than your average cult classic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But like, I've just always kind of loved it. And then when we met, and you know, you had a perfect predilection for So Bad It's Good movies, and that have this like crazed production history and stuff. Like a famously Maximum Overdrive, completely directed by Stephen King while like high out of his mind on cocaine. Also like a wildly reckless production where like a stunt guy got blinded during a stunt with the lawnmower when the kid's riding his bike and
oh, yeah
the lawnmower. Yeah, like you know, something chipped up out of a lawnmower in the guy's eye, and he got friggin' blinded in one eye, and I mean, legitimately, like, I think still wears, like, an eye patch to this day.
God, imagine.
And all kinds of crazy, like, shit that, you know what I mean? And it's just, like, a wild production. Not that people had a bad time, but just one of those. So, knowing that, you know, you were into that, I was like, oh Joe's my dude. This will be, Joe, this will be my thing. This is a So Bad It's Good. This is, like, this will be, like, right up his alley. And much like Drowning Mona and Cabin Boy before it, fell flat as a fucking pancake with Joe.
So coming in here, so we do, I have that, right? Like, and me and Laura especially, like, dude, So Bad It's Good. I'll go this far, like, little
although you're
is
not
like,
as much into So Bad It's Good horror as you are into, like rom-coms and stuff like that,
and
too.
And horror, but all of it.
But
and
I know more or less say, so when you watch stuff together, it's not...
Yeah, together it's a little different, but yeah. I'll go over to say, like, connoisseurs of the So Bad It's Good genre of, like, you know, sitting there, watching it, joking. That's a big part of it, right? Talking, joking, the commentary of it all. So when I first saw Maximum Overdrive, it was probably the week or week two after, like, How Did This Get Made covered it. Like, let's say, like, 2014, 2015. I don't really remember the year. So we watched it, and I remember it had the cardinal sin of, because I remember, like, because the movie, and we start really talking about it, is it does start off really hot, and you're like, oh, this is going to be fucking great. Like, it has,
yeah, we can get into that in a little bit, because I think that is definitely one of both the strengths and weaknesses of the movie, but we'll hold off on that.
it has, to me, before we start on the top of this, I've watched it three times, because I watched it twice for this, for our conversation today.
To prepare your mind and body and spirit.
More because I had to, like, I actually did it at a bad time where I dozed off and I had to rewind it. So I watched it, like, 1.5 times. But it has the cardinal sin of, it's so boring. It gets so boring to me. That
see, I don't find it very boring. Mm-hmm. I do think it drags for a 90-minute movie, but because it's only a 90-minute movie,
for a 90-minute movie, it's
there's
edible.
Always like something coming up I can get excited for or something. I would say in the last act, I think you could really. We haven't even talked the plot yet.
Yeah, I'm gonna read the description.
You could probably pluck the scene of them. Filling up the gas. If you took that like 10 or 15 minute where they're like servants at the gas station and they have to fill the trucks, you know what I mean? If you could just pluck that part out, take that like 10 or 15 minutes out, you might be able to tighten this movie.
I like some of the like the practicality of a lot of stuff, and I do get the over the topness and all of that. But for me, it just has that line of flatness. And it's like I said at the top, you know, it's comparable in the thematics of it, of the way it is. It's like The Happening, right? The Happening is the same. It's the same premise, basically. Yeah. Like, supernatural events are causing things to go off and people to die. Loosely, same thing. Happening at least has these two crazy performances going on, or, you know, everyone's doing these wild performances that make no sense.
You're telling me there's somebody more wild than Wanda June in The Happening?
So, having said that, those scenes that you're referring to, like Wanda June, literally, I made you. Like,
she's jumping up and down.
That is the good of
this. She's doing this number, she's like...
That is the good. Those are the parts that are good. It's the things in between. I'm like, I don't know why. It just exhausts me. So having said all of that, I am going to read, as we do on the show, the synopsis pulled from Google that I have not read yet. Now, okay. After a comet causes a radiation storm on Earth, machines come to life and turn against their makers. Holed up in a North Carolina truck stop, a group of survivors must fend for themselves against a mass homicidal trucks. A diner cook, Bill Robinson, emerges as the unlikely leader of the pack, attempting to find an escape plan for himself and the survivors, who include his boss, Bubba Hendershot, and a newlywed...
Bubba Hendershot, played by the amazing Pat Hingle, who is named Bubba and calls everyone Bubba?
Yeah, that's... Bubba, but then he called... literally learned his name just now from reading that. It was a, for all the descriptions, it's a great description. That movie,
this is a really solid one. I was going to say, this might sound like a competent movie.
So yeah, dude, we start off the movie though with this like, the movie starts with this great manic energy, and I do wish there was more of that throughout it, of like the screens reading "fuck you" and the Stephen King with the "you're an asshole" at the, and then dying by ATM.
This is the thing that I think is the problem with the whole movie. The reason that it doesn't hit the same like so bad is good chord with everyone. It's too front loaded with all the fun stuff. And it kind of never fulfills on that premise. Like, the whole first act is the bridge. You know, you got the great bridge stunt, yeah, which is an incredible use of, like, combination of miniatures and real stunts.
Oh, the cars all falling on each other.
Falling over, and you got Marla. That's Marla Maples getting almost killed
really?
Yeah, Marla Maples, formerly Trump, getting almost murdered by a watermelon. And then... that's all really great. You got the stuff with my favorite. I mean, probably the scene that sold me on it as a kid is the pop can scene with the coach.
Right.
Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff.
One kid has a catcher's mask on.
Yeah, that kid, that's Deke. Deke's our hero kid.
Yeah.
Icon. A hero. And just brave. Dude is just, he crawls up to check, he puts the mask up and crawls under a hail of can fire to check on his coach. And that dude is dead as hell.
That kid escapes everything.
Yeah, he doesn't escape not having a dad, because his dad gets plowed by a truck.
Well,
his dad's the guy who sprays himself with the gas in his eyes and then stumbles in front of a truck. Yeah.
Oh. Nope. Yeah. Well, he's dadless, but a lot of people probably lost some family members in this. You know, it's weird. There is this genre of movie, right? Of like, I don't know, something made the world happen and things go crazy.
Well, essentially, this is a zombie movie. I mean, you show the apocalypse at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then you have a group of survivors hold up, and you have zombies kind of, you know, it's Dawn of the Dead, only the zombies are trucks. You know, mm-hmm. It's just, they're stuck in one spot, zombies are outside, you can't get out, people can't get in to help you, you know.
I know this is relying all on Stephen King shit, right? Like
also a very short story, probably never meant to be stretched to to a 90-minute movie.
Stephen King, you know, and Brian already mentioned it, famously, you know, was like, I don't remember filming that, I was so coked up. And then even other people on the set.
Although I also feel that's a bit of a cop out. It's like every time somebody criticizes something, it's like, oh, I was on a lie. Oh, did that have a bad ending? Cocaine did that. Mm-hmm. Oh, what? That's a good book? I wrote that.
But then also at the same time, like I was reading today, like one of the other people that worked on it were like, yeah, I didn't see him do coke, but he was so drunk and reeked of booze the whole time. Like, so, but you're right, it is a cop out.
It's so funny, I have the Vestron Blu-ray, and you know, we all love our sanitized Blu-ray special features. All the behind-the-scenes stuff is like, he was there with his family on set?
Really? Yeah,
I bet he was.
It's no secret. They even mention and talk about, like, it's also believed that, like, George A. Romero, like, shot, like, a large portion of this movie for him because the camera work and, like, things like that were, like, staples of Romero, where they're, like...
And more sophisticated than... Although, to be fair, Stephen King, they had worked already together on Creepshow and stuff, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, so... There was that connection, and you also had, this is De Laurentiis Pictures, who had done a bunch of Stephen King stuff already and did more after this.
We get a three-picture deal. Like
Firestarter and Cat's Eye and all the... Firestarter rules, by the way. I just watched that this year. It's awesome.
Yeah, I gotta rewatch. I gotta see that. He has a three-picture deal, and then it got immediately cut. A three-picture directing deal. Then it's cut after this. This movie, I mean... it was made for $9 million, which is a really modest budget for this time. And in their defense,
money's on the screen. I think the money is on the screen here. The goblin truck alone is such a
That was the other fun fact that I pulled out that was interesting. Is like Goblin Truck. Yeah, no, they just no ass of Marvel. There was no, it was just put in there, and
it
you know,
did it.
That thing's still in circulation.
Oh yeah, there's like a guy refurbished one, and there's a special feature about him. A guy who refurbished one, but there's also another one, because there's that picture I sent you, the one that's like clearly in a junkyard, and that was a different one from the refurbishing video. So there must have been a few. That truck is so good. Like, what an iconic, you know, that alone is like, it's like a great horror mask. You know what I mean? When a movie has like an iconic thing like that, and they 100% nailed it. And it is so funny that they just like, no, we don't have anything to do with Marvel. We just did it. We just did whatever.
It has, and Marvel in the 80s couldn't even muster a lawyer up if they wanted to sue to get that. It's great though with that the truck itself. There is a leader, right? There is a distinctness to the leader of this gangle of trucks that
Stephen King specifically went out. They talk about it on the Blu-ray too, about how he went out like casting and like looked for different, you know, trucks that were different enough so they would all, there'd be like some distinct ones and stuff.
And you kind of mentioned it earlier with be saying King being coked out as a cop out for it being bad. This is my issue with I never read any Stephen King. I know he's horror royalty. I'm the flimsiest version of a fan in the sense of I like the movies I've seen that are good, and everything else is fine. And I think the guy is a stand for anything. So like, you know, the cop out of like that, or like he'll come out and be like, yeah, this trip, like the new Fires, great movie, because he's a producer, you know, the classic.
Right, sure.
I have money into it, so I'm just, it's great, I love it, where I'm like, all right, Steven, does your word go that long? You know how many movies have we seen over our lifetime that they have a tag of scariest movie Stephen King's ever seen?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and I think Stephen King is a very talented writer. I think his writing is hard to translate to film. Mm. I think they've gotten better at it. And I think obviously there's a sliding scale.
Because
some people have done better with it than others.
Which was a great version of it.
But I think he's earned like his status as a horror writer and a horror creator. But I agree that he's at that stage of his career now where he's like Stan Lee. He's a brand.
Mm-hmm, he's
a brand. No reverence for celebrities. We don't have to do that. We can enjoy his work and whatever, but we don't have to revere anybody.
That's what I was kind of more getting at. I'm like, all right, because there's some people that are like, Stephen King rule, the quote, you know, Monster Squad, Stephen King rules. Sure. But more or less for me, from, you know, Carrie to It, I'm gonna separate the bad in between and call it as such.
Sure.
Having said that, yeah, Hearns is right. Who are we to sit on here and be like, you know who doesn't know what they're doing?
I don't even think Stephen King did that good of a job directing a movie, a thing that I've never done or have any concept of. I'm here to talk about how
I want you to talk about how you like it, and I don't, but I'm trying to be cordial and or just productive of this.
That's fine.
But no, so we have that chaotic opening, like you said, with the soda can scene, and
Giancarlo Esposito, Gus Fring as the video game player.
I didn't even put two and two together. Wait,
he only has one line. He says, "Yo, mama."
Yeah, no, I know though. I didn't recognize him.
That's him, man. Shit. That's the intimidating villain from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
No, he was still. That's amazing.
There's a couple of. We got a couple of. There's another horror. He's not royalty, but he definitely deserves a shout out. Is Frankie Faison? He plays in this. He plays Handy. He's the guy who drives the Goblin truck.
I was like, where do I know him from? His face was so familiar.
He's from the Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal, Red Dragon franchise. He's like the orderly that Hannibal has on like good terms with, that like is respectful of Hannibal, and he's in all of them. And so like he gets it's crazy that he's in all three. He's one of the few characters that makes it into all three of those, the Anthony Hopkins movies. And
I have his IMDb up right now. I mean, I'm noticing him in a ton of things. I'm like,
he's got a ton of, but that's always what I know him from.
I think I know him from White Chicks as the chief, the police chief.
Poor, that's unfortunate.
But that's where I'm like,
hey, yes. You know, the man's a working actor. That's what that means. You know what I mean? He's paying his bills.
I was trying to figure it out, and I didn't Google it while we were watching. While I was watching it, no, this cast is so interesting. And like, yeah, Emilio Estevez. I mean, famously also.
This is like height of his powers, Emilio. This is very like strong Emilio times.
And famously, or not so famously, I don't know. But we were mentioned. Stephen King wanted Bruce Springsteen to be the lead. Springsteen was ready to go, and the producers or the financiers of the movie were like, we don't know who that really is. So and this is what I read
brutal.
About. Like,
brutal.
They're like,
well, that's what
they're
it's
like.
Funny.
Cast Martin Sheen's son. That's what they, like, quote for quote, what I kind of read of, like, we want Martin Sheen's son, Emilio, in it, because
this is post-Breakfast Club. This is, like, Brat Pack era right. Emilio, yeah.
Yeah, and, yeah, Emilio's doing this, like, tough guy southern accent thing. The other notable name, for me at least, is, you know, a rare, like, Yardley Burns. Wait, I thought it was Yardley Burns.
Burns? Is your last name Burns now? No. It's always been Smith.
No, it's Yardley Smith. I don't know where I'm getting Yardley Burns from. It was Yardley Smith and like, you know, just a voice. I mean, that woman even trying to do a southern accent is Lisa Simpson.
Yeah, I've only ever seen her on, you know, in live
Godzilla.
Action in a few other things.
Godzilla.
Well, Godzilla has like half the cast of The Simpsons in it.
One of the weirdest.
But it's so funny. I love it. She's so funny in this. And I like the energy of her and the husband, Curtis and Connie. I like how she is obviously overbearing and annoying, but he never snaps at her. He never breaks with her. They're you know what I mean? They're newlyweds. They're in love. He gets a little annoyed. He rolls his eyes, but he's never like...
As anyone would with your partner.
Right, and especially when your partner is like her, but like she's tailor-made to be the character that somebody yells at and snaps at in the movie because they're under such a stressful situation, and that just never happens, and I just really enjoy that.
Keened on that insight of it. And then rounding our cast characters is... We talked about Bubba, the prick prick owner of the diner.
And then Joey's his son. He's got like a dumb son too.
He's a dumb son. And then we have our like female protagonist, which would be, I'll be honest, Brett.
Brett. Laura Harrington is the actress's name.
Yeah, and she's like, she's playing a drifter, basically, who rolls in with this creep salesman.
Wouldn't be a Stephen King script without a creepy religious dude in it. Mm-hmm.
And I do like that of her character. She's like, I'm going to cut your fucking hand off if, you know, you touch me again, because he's, you know, trying to, like, grab her leg and this. And she hears the thing on the radio of bring the car into the diner. And then eventually the kid gets there and this diner is... I like the way you put it. It's a zombie movie, and everyone ends up at this one spot.
Right. But here's the thing, and we can talk about just a second before we get into any more, is that that's also part of the reason I think it doesn't work for a lot of people, is that you have the promise of every machine going crazy, and you see it for a little bit, but then when it boils down, the majority of the movie is just trucks driving in a circle around... You know what I mean? And like, and that's why it doesn't have that same bite, because they kind of gave you a little taste. Like, come on, when what about the toy police car in the dog's mouth and the dead dog's mm-hmm. mouth? There's so many good little, like, give me a movie of all the stuff that Deke rides by on his, you know, show
so
me
the
neighbor
riding around
crazy,
and like,
right?
Like the sprinklers are going off, and like, I guess those are controlled by you know, this force.
That's another thing that I think hurts the movie. And actually, it's funny, Yardley Smith mentions this on the Blu-ray, is that the rules are too inconsistent on what is and isn't coming to life, how the coming to life works. Why are parts
coming to life?
Yeah. Are things that aren't plugged in, like some stuff doesn't have to be plugged in to come to life?
Well, the electric cutter, which is the first inkling in the diner. I know I'm really jumping around compared to...
No, it's okay. Like I said, we don't need to do the whole... People get it.
Inkling of the you know, diner is...
We're still in the very beginning of the movie, kind of, so you're okay.
What's the waitress
face? June, when it attacks... Wanda, when the... It's it
just the, it like going into her arm and falls out, and then Emilio runs out with a hammer and just beats it. And it's like, well, that solved that problem.
And also, like, the trucks at different times, they look with mirrors, like the mirrors are their eyes. And then also Emilio talks into the goblin truck's ear, but it's just like a fiberglass ear on the front of the truck.
I can't. Emilio, this is all the way in. Emilio seeing everything that happens and then going, no, I have the tough guy energy to basically talk, then start standing my ground and talk down to these trucks that have just recklessly killing and pancaking everyone. I mean, one of my favorites is the baseball scene of the steamroller
when it comes through.
Just pancakes everyone. And
it actually legitimately splattered pancakes a kid. It's great.
Yeah. You know, it's literally, the movie should just be called Pancaking, because that's the best part. Those are the best
parts. Well, and despite how much I love it, I can understand. That's the thing about growing and maturing as a film fan, is like, you can understand the flaws in something and enjoy it for your own, whether it's nostalgia or whether it's just like, I legitimately love a lot of the things in this movie, but yeah, I understand that, like, it kind of teases you with this great idea, and then it's like, and now here we are, we're just going to sit in here while these trucks drive in a circle.
Yeah. It's...
And then I think there's some really fun bits in between there. I like all the little stuff that happens, and so it's fine for me, but I 100% get it.
No, it's more of a comedy. It's more of a violent comedy or a horror than a horror itself, and that's fine. And yeah, no, I love that you love it, because I have 1,000 of those in this genre of so bad it's good, where I'm like, I don't expect anyone to actually like to enjoy this on my level.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I was wondering if, you know, Lincoln Hawk's truck was part of that parade of, you know.
Well, again, you know, we talk about missed opportunities and also inconsistencies. So shit's going haywire. Everybody's kind of already at the Dixie Boy, except Curtis and Connie. They're still driving around, and their car, well, they're driving it, never. Stay in control of their car, and I thought, real missed opportunity to have them kind of have to fight their own car while they're driving it, and have it try to like go off.
And like,
The chase scene with them and the truck on the highway is cool, and I like all the stuff at the gas station with them is actually really good. Again, another reckless stunt where the dude, like, shouldn't have been in there, like a real stuntman should have been in there, but he was so like, no, I'll do it, and then, like, almost got run over.
when they were in the car, when they were supposed to be in the car, and it flipped in front of the gas station?
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a cool scene, them fighting, you know, the car itself and, like, it breaking down, like, half a mile or something before the diner. So, like, you know, they gotta travel on foot there, and they're not, you know, okay.
Well, and I do like, they do a couple things. I like them trying to shoot the gap between the trucks and getting caught, and then that's when Bubba comes out with his rocket launcher, and we get our reveal of,
the arsenal in the basement.
Pre-Tremors, by the way. This is a pre-Tremors basement arsenal.
But it's not just an arsenal. It's like he's gun running down there.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has bazookas.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what it is he's gun ridden. This is probably what's in his basement is probably like leftover stockpile stuff he's like skimmed off the top. But he's definitely, I mean, he runs a trucking depot, trucks sure. in and out all the time. Just makes sure. sense to me. Also, we know that he employs mostly cons because
yes,
he can keep his, it's easy for him to keep them under control. He just threatens them so they'll stay out of his business. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very likely, it's not necessarily said out loud, I think it's super likely that Bubba Hendershot runs guns.
I started taking notes about that. Like, I was taking notes, and then about halfway through, I was like, we're not even going to go through it this way. I just stopped, like, my normal note-taking process and just watched. So that's a good point. So he runs guns, and that's our logic of why it's in the basement. And I like how Bubba is also trying to keep everything still, like, a secret that he's doing, and, like, your classic boss or character of, I'm ignoring everything that's going on in the world because I'm too ignorant of my own devices.
Yeah. Well, and it's like there's a classic Stephen King thing too, and he does, because I think he does it. They do it in The Mist, where like the world is clearly falling apart, but there's somebody who's like, "Hey, you're gonna get fired. You don't steal from me during the end of the world," or you know what I mean? Kind of like trying to maintain these power structures, even though like everything's falling apart. And then once Emilio gets a machine gun, it's like pretty much the end of the road. That's it. You know, you've lost control.
Emilio has no control
now. You have no control. So they're all, you know, they all get there. Curtis and Connie fake it through. Now everybody's in the Dixie Boy. I like, I don't think the love story is very believable, but it's very classic horror movie to be like, hey, end of the world, we're the two hottest people here, so let's hook up.
She also just, like, goes immediately to, not even just hottest, like, she immediately is like, oh, I just got assaulted, things are weird, hey, man. You're cute.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And honestly, she might have just been looking out for her own best interest, because looking around, a lot of creeps in that truck stop. A lot of weird, gross creeps. And you're a girl by yourself who already rode in with a creep. You know, situation ain't right. And
I guess she's
maybe
seen
time him. To maybe time to find a buddy.
And I guess she's seen him like stand up to Bubba for his son, for Bubba's son, you know, because he's like, things are bad. We're not doing this for you. We quit. So I guess, yeah, she's seen Emilio be a leader before she kind of puts the pass on them. Spoiler alert, they bang.
What about the weird sweat licking? He like takes beads of sweat off her forehead. Is like, it's real.
That's real nasty. It's not sexy at all. And they've also like when's the last time either of them have took a shower?
Well, she changes her clothes after the religious guy gets hit.
Okay.
Gets hit by the truck. She changes her clothes, remember, because she's like, ooh, he had his hands on me, and I don't want to smell him on me and whatever. So she's cleaned up at least once that day.
Okay. And they do the big sign that says showers.
Yeah.
So maybe she took a shower there, but also still, like, that is a stinky couple if they didn't, even with the clean clothes.
Well, I mean, apparently he liked it. He was getting in the sweat.
Oh, man, that's so
gross.
Ooh. Yeah, I've never been like, you know what I'm gonna do right now? Lick a bead of sweat.
No.
They're cramping up.
Sweat dripping on you during sex is a thing you just try to like get through. You're like, just pretend that didn't happen.
It's just you're like, it's happening, but like I know I'm gonna feel it after.
It's just move on. We're just moving on. We're just powering through.
Yeah, no, dude, this movie's so silly, and, like, I think...
We're just about up to the silliest moment, which is Wanda June. We talked about it a minute ago, but when Wanda June does her We Made You, she's jumping up and down, she's waving her arms around and shit. It's really great. Speaking of sex, her and Bubba Hendershot definitely banged. They come out right before they both get shot. Right before they both get murdered, they come out and they're, like, buttoning up.
And then she gives him kind of like not a kiss, but like, we're ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, and she's using the, you know, this is scored and soundtracked by AC/DC just because Stephen King's a fan, and so and good. She's literally using the Stephen King the AC/DC lyrics for that. We made you, you made me.
And well, they haven't. That was a new song for the movie, and mm-hmm. then they had an album that came out, but it had like some hits on it. It wasn't all new stuff on the We Made You.
So people thought it was a greatest hits album.
Yeah, but it did kind of. It was like a resurgence. AC/DC was in. You know, the Satanic Panic had hit them kind of hard, and they were in a bit of a slump. And this definitely didn't hurt. You know,
no.
We made Who Made Who's a good song. It rips.
The record.
It fits into AC. It doesn't feel like a song made. It feels like it could have just been an AC/DC song. So that's good enough for me.
I think next time you have a conversation of like songs from movies or movie songs, throw that on there and it'll confuse the hell out of a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, it's like how there's that one Madonna song. It's like a slow song. And it's actually like the song for like that movie Vision Quest.
That she sings in it.
You know, it's like you would have never in a million years been like, you know that ballot you like movie.
It came from Vision Quest. You know how you like Smash Mouth at the beginning of Shrek? It's actually from Mystery Men.
That's my favorite. I've literally been driving and heard like, you know, top 10 or top 100 or whatever, like. Pop, you know, the DJ in the morning guy, do that trivia question, and people are like, it's Shrek, and they're like, oh no, it's Mystery Men.
Even the video, if you watch the music video, it's all Mystery Men. We get, let's see, Deke gets there, he finds a way in, they find a way, like, they have to go through the sewer to get to the other side of the highway to kind of find, they're gonna try to save the guy who got hit by the truck, the religious guy. He ends up being dead, but Deke's over there. Deke has made it. This is the kid, so they bring him in. A truck. This is again. This is one of those things where like the logic doesn't make any sense because a little truck with a machine gun shows up. We don't know how it knew to come there or anything, but it shows.
Well, they're all. They all start coming.
I guess they're all interconnected. I guess we can talk about a little bit. Emilio speculates that this is like a kind of sweep and clear of like aliens turn our own technology against us to kill us off so that they can take over the planet. And at the end credits, you know, in the big ending crawl or whatever it is they have, they do say that there was a UFO up there. So that, you mm-hmm. know,
that was controlling I guess it everything. Was
directed to some extent. But again, like, okay, so they can communicate, that's fine, but how does the little machine gun truck see to shoot people?
Well, also, how does it keep having the bullets?
That's what I thought. That was my thing. I was like, you do, it's aliens rules. You just get it to shoot until it runs out of bullets, and then it can't reload itself. It doesn't have fingers or hands. But there's no machine that can reload it.
It shot so many bullets, too.
It did.
So like, and yeah, so that comes there and it keeps them, and the way the truck just keeps circling and circling,
yeah,
and then their master plan is to fill the trucks. They want us to fuel up them to keep going.
Yeah, well, they do Morse code. Remember, they actually do send a message. Mm-hmm. They beep 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 beep. They beep out some Morse code, which is
so
fine.
So they fill it up because it's the only diesel station.
And he is pretty stupid when I talk about it.
They're worked to shit. Mealy was like worked to shit.
Pumping gas in the hot sun, just
like round the clock. And they're like, no, and they're all held up because they're all just afraid of getting shot. But they're actually tunneling their way underneath to go to the other side.
At the same time, they're going to use the like. The shower escape to get across, and then they're gonna like the plan is to escape to find a boat. There's like a marina close by. This is filmed in Wilmington. That takes place in Wilmington, North Carolina. It was also filmed in Wilmington, North Carolina. It actually created a bit of a little film industry in Wilmington, North Carolina for a long time, till a couple years ago when the Republican administration of the state took away the tax breaks. So all the film studios went to Atlanta and to South Carolina, where they still have the tax breaks.
So makes sense.
So that sucks because there's a lot of like cool, you know, it was like a, you know, it'd been around for 20 or 30 years, so they had like generational families who were working in the film biz, and then it was just gone. So that's shitty, but
that's real shitty. I know.
It was cool for a while, and they made some great movies there. Screen Gems had their studio there.
That's like Durham, North Carolina. Also, same thing.
Yeah.
Like big, or not big film, but like we just watched all of the One Tree Hill stuff, and like that's.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, we did, and we had a great time doing
it. I've been seeing those GIFs, man.
And we have had a great time talking about silly ass shit that'll randomly have like horror-ish episodes. Every season has its own single white female storyline, basically. But that's not the point. Is Durham, North Carolina, also same thing with the filming, where they were like, Dawson's Creek filmed there, and I think immediately that took over, and then because of that, like, other thing. So maybe it's North Carolina, pre that, what you said, had all these nice tax... That sucks for, you know, what you're saying, Wilmington.
Yeah, but anyway... They're going to escape to a marina. The only reason I mentioned the Wilmington
and that is
North Carolina, because there's a close by marina. They're on the, you know, they're near the water.
And them escaping from that is very zombie movie. Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Get on a boat.
I'll tell you what. I love the... Right before when they're getting ready to escape, he's talking to the guy and the gun's looking at him. And Emilio's got one of my favorite lines. Like, hey, man. Just a little peep business. Just got to do a little peep business here. And that's what he's like. And he does the thing that, like, they could have done at any time, which is just hit the gun. And it spins around all ridiculously.
And also,
and he drops a grenade in there, and, like, they take off, and they blow it up. And then all the trucks. I do love that one of the great things, because they built the Dixie Boy, the whole set was a place that they built. They got to blow it up at the end, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Makes for great special effect. They get to dram trucks through everything and then blow everything up. Makes for a really great practical effects.
That answers at least somewhat of the question of, you know, the whole movie, like, why don't they just start firing at these trucks?
Yeah.
Like, you have the arsenal down there to just keep unloading, shoot out tires.
Yeah, they for some reason they knew. They were like, we start a fight with them, they'll just drive in here and fall through the floor and smash the whole place and blow it up, and then it'll be over, you know? So they tried to hold out, I guess.
I do love when the one shot of the 18-wheeler, when the first one that goes through the Dixie, because it has the cartoon-style cutout of the wall still on it.
Yeah.
So you can see the bricks removed. It looks like the Kool-Aid man going through, but it's the it's the truck. No, this talking about this more and thinking, it actually does remind me of a, like, because it's so silly, a Treehouse of Horror bit. Like, I could see that being a fucking
sure.
Matt Groening, or probably a different Simpsons writer, being like, okay, the joke is that a bunch of the threat is a bunch of trucks are circling around this, and it's, you know, controlled. It's controlled by a UFO.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's a natural progression from something like Christine. You know, you have one evil car. Well, what about a bunch of evil cars?
And
what if they were actually trucks?
And that gets me to the point of where I laughed the hardest of more of like, what is the Emilio Estevez when the truck is like nudging him and following him, and
he's like, chest bumping the truck when he's like, "What's up, bro? You want to go?"
As if the truck's like, "Well, if we keep this guy alive, our problems are solved." Like, pancake him.
Yeah, just pancake him.
Like,
you got plenty of people there.
It was so.
Teach a lesson.
It was so. That was the point of being like, this is where you lose the fact of like. You know, if you're going for, you know, Arnold versus the Predator, you know, in an actual fight, there's an actual physical being, you know, we made you.
Well, also, we didn't talk about this when we skimmed over the idea that this is alien controlled, but also, what a terrible plan from the aliens. Like, the trucks, they can hardly, they didn't, it doesn't seem like they were doing a very good job of killing everybody.
It's like it was written by my 2-year-old nephew Wes, where the only thing he loves in life is trucks. Yeah. You know, like,
he's got trucks on the brain, so that's what he's doing.
You know,
If Harrison had written this when he was a child, it would have been like construction equipment, like bulldozers and diggers and stuff.
Yeah, the excavator. But we sit there with my nephew and we, you know, that's what we, you know, I got him a giant garbage truck that moves and it's metal for Chris. But that's what this movie script was for him. And honestly, if it wasn't seeing people getting pancaked, I'd be like, yeah, let's turn it on, Wes, because you would just go,
if it was like an edited version that's just the trucks driving around that Wes can watch,
he'd love it.
It's like you have the baseball scene at the beginning, you just cut before any of the violence, and there's a little bit of baseball, kids like baseball, you know, the video, you have the guy playing the video games before he gets electrocuted, you know, you just cut it. Cut everything off before the violence
going
starts.
Around and Emilio Estevez looking sweaty, the kid's gonna love it.
You leave the sweat licking in, though.
I got it. Kids need to learn. But what is, like, it's, I'm glad, this is what I say at this, is I'm glad movies like this do exist, because I like that you like it, and I like that there's this lane of it, because there are these bad movies where people have sat down and they're like, what? And I'm like, no, it's fucking terrible. I don't like this. This is, I think, not so much of that.
I'm long past the point of ever trying to convince anybody, but like, and all, but also like somebody else not liking a movie doesn't affect me anymore. You know?
No, there's certain ones. Like every Thanksgiving, people try to come around and be like, Thanksgiving's really funny and good. And I'm like, no, speaking about a short movie that's like 67 minutes, that feels like it's 3 hours, that's that movie, because it's bad. So this gets the credit of, you have a fun history, it's fun to talk about.
It's got a fun history. I think it's got a pretty solid production. Like, I think it looks pretty good. I think there's all like the good effects in it. I think there's fun performances in it a lot. I think Yardley Smith is a fun performance. Bubba is a fun performance. Obviously, Wanda June. I think there's just a lot to love. But I also understand why it doesn't hit with everybody. It's like, to get it to that like extra cult status level, it either needed to go harder on like the gore and violence and like really like kick that up a notch, you know what I mean? Or like fulfill more on its premise of every machine going crazy and not so focus so much on trucks. Either way, I understand why it didn't hit for everyone, but also, I would say if you're a fan of So Bad It's Good and like crazy cinema like this, to at least do yourself the favor of giving it a chance.
Give it a chance. I'll settle with you there. Give it a chance. It's, if you know where you're going in, go for it. And at the same time, it's uneven, which is a theme of all bad, So Bad It's Good movie. Like, the unevenness of it, you know, doesn't make it work. Makes it work in the sense of, if you're not ready or you don't have the right group, it's not going to work.
It might be one of those things where you enjoy it more watching it in a group, because during the slow parts, you get up and get a beer or you're chatting, and then you just look over and you see somebody getting machine gunned, like, RoboCop machine gun, like Splatter's machine gun. I guess they do go kind of hard with some of the gore in this. They pull their punch again, weirdly uneven. They pull their punches at some points, but then they go hard some other places, you know. There were a couple things right at the very end that I love. One thing I had never noticed before, you know, when Deke's trying to make his way to the truck stop and he's kind of like on foot or he has his bike, a plane goes over, you know, it's an unmanned plane.
That was a silly part. The plane coming out of nowhere being part of it.
Like the plane doing recon, I guess, you know, makes sense. But later when they're on their Dawn of the Dead final run to the boat, you know, trying to get to the boat, you see a plane. They run by a school bus with a plane just like sticking out of it, like a kamikaze directly into the top of a parked school bus, because it's all like intact, kind of. It's so funny to me, and it looked like it might even have been dressed to be the same plane from earlier. Like, the color scheme was pretty close, would make sense. But I love the idea that like like some kids were trying to escape on a school bus or something, and this plane just like nosedive right into the top of it. And then I love to, at the very, very end, they're almost out of there. They've almost escaped. And one guy cannot resist pulling a big old diamond ring off of the lady's hand that's sticking out of the car. And he gets pancaked. And it's one of those great things where, like, somehow an 18-wheeler with a diesel engine snuck up on him and got so close that it could pancake him. He couldn't get away.
It's the same thing as, like, in fucking Moonfall, the being like the moon in an 18-wheeler truck acting like Michael Myers, if everyone's like,
I always thought that
snuck up right behind me.
That's one of my favorite kind of caveats of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, that like, to use a chainsaw as a weapon, it always needs to be turned on, which means it would constantly have to be like, so you would always know where that dude was. You would not be sneaking up on anybody to be like, all of a sudden come busting, like, he would either have to bust through the wall and then be like,
all right, he'd give you enough time to. Hold
on. He knocks you down and then stands on you while he revs it up. But no, it's always running when he busts through. But you would know. He'd be right. You'd hear him. Well, and this is the same thing. I love an 18-wheeler with a diesel engine that sneaks up on a guy.
It's so quiet. It's so soft. Yeah, it's such a silly movie. But
I do think, like I said, I think it is over the top enough, and with the crazy production history and the kind of like one and done, Stephen King only directed this movie and it was so wild that he just like walked away and never returned to that. I think all of that stuff builds it and gives it enough of a base to be one of those so bad it's good. Like I said, to me, this is the Room of horror movies, you know? But
just
like The Room, I don't even like The Room. It's just not everything is for
everyone.
No,
it's not.
You know what I mean? And I'm fine with that. But okay. God bless Joe. He let me co-host his show, and the first thing I did was like, let me talk about this movie that you don't like.
The Room, by the way, The Room for horror movies is Troll 2, but that's...
Yeah, I guess you're right. And honestly, it's not even that. It's probably something even more obscure, like something they cover on Best of the Worst. Like, Troll 2 is almost too mainstream to be the
That's
Room
mainstream.
For horror.
It's mainstream. Maximum Overdrive is mainstream.
Maximum Overdrive is mad. It's super mainstream.
You know, it's a good. You know what is a good one that they covered on Best of the Worst? It was a childhood core memory that Best of the Worst uncovered for me. It's called like Turbulence 3.
Oh, okay.
With Slade Craven. It was like this demon rock guy. And I had that image in my head for, let's say, 15 years. Of, like, I saw it on USA or something at my aunt's house. It was like, remember this movie? There's a plane and a hostage. Watching Best of the Worst one day, and I was like, there it is.
It was like the Usual Suspects thing. You're like, coffee cup slowly dropped to the ground and shattered.
Exactly. Googled it, and then it was fucking, you know, it's on like Tubi or some shit. But yeah, horror thankfully has a big lane of so bad. Like, there's also such a difference between so bad it's good movies and B movie. You know, and horror is such a weird genre with this. And this, I guess how I'll end this is, it's such a weird genre when it comes to so bad it's good movies, because there's plenty of them, but then there's also this huge lane of, you know, are B and like B and less movies that are classics to people and they absolutely love them and it's for them. And you can't consider them in the so bad it's good category. They're goofy. I hope I'm making sense here.
No. Well, and also those scales are totally personalized. Like, you can't something like I couldn't even tell you, do I consider this movie so bad it's good, or do I consider it like B movie schlock cult?
I think it's so bad.
You know
it's
what I mean?
Cult, not B movie schlock. And I'm splitting hairs.
It's also
here.
Niche cult, like we talked about. It's not even. It doesn't have the bigger cult following of like, you know. Like,
you're not walking a Hot Topic and buying a shirt for Maximum Overdrive.
Although, only because they couldn't put the Goblin on it, you know, it wouldn't be able to.
That is the thing with the Goblin too. It's like the comic Goblin. It's a sick looking just character design too.
Yeah,
it's really but Brian, anything you really wanted to add to our conversation here that you felt we might have missed? Or, like, I know we didn't do our traditional run through, especially without having a, you know, a so-and-so guest on.
Yeah, I think we talked, but I think we broke down the structure of the movie.
Yeah, enough. It's
it's got the basic, you know, it's got the world, the world going to shit, the group, the core group coming together, the core group realizing they can't, you know, they need to make a plan and leave, and then the finale.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it's just, you know, it's got what zombie movies and horror movies need, which is a bunch of crazy characters and a bunch of crazy violence. And I, like I said, for me, this one holds up. It's a lot of fun, but it's also one that I fully understand it's not going to be for everybody.
Definitely. And if it's for you, let us know. I want to hear about it.
Yeah, I would love to hear any of the followers of Flavor State of Fear. Let me know if this makes your list. Like, this is legitimately one of my favorite horror movies. I watch this shit all the time.
I will see. I think when we fire the promo tweet out, I could see some being like, yeah, I love that one. Or, you know, about that. I've been surprised. Just with people's reactions.
Well, this one, you know what I mean? It's got a, because of the AC/DC and because of the trucks and stuff, I think there's like a, also like a core, like, you get like a kind of like metalheads like this movie. You know what I mean? This is like, this look, is like, I mean, an look 80s. At the it came out in the middle of the 80s, the like metal era. This is a hair band movie.
Look
you
at
know?
Look at the Vestron cover. You know?
Oh, yeah.
That's
a metal. Yeah. No. Also, speaking of, if you haven't already bought this, you might want to wait just a minute. I'm not talking to Joe. I mean anybody. Walmart just announced they're partnering with Vestron to put out a steelbook. So if that's your thing, it'll have all the same features. It's not going to be anything different to the edition.
No, but
if you like steelbooks.
No, but I like slipcovers, and I don't even like this movie, and my sickness
that
is...
That slipcover's dope, right?
Oh, my God. My sickness is that I'm literally like, oh, maybe I do pick that one up if it has a slip, even though I don't like it, because that's my sickness.
That's what happened when we both bought the Candyman 3 Blu-ray from Vestron Video also.
Candyman 3 from just Vestron.
Just a sick cover art.
This man. Candyman Vestron. Vestron also put out the Dentist 1 and 2, and I picked that up because...
I just saw that. I almost bought it, but I don't think I even have ever seen the Dentist, and I literally was like, damn, that cover art's pretty dope.
I've only seen the first one. I think on like USA Network or something. Mm-hmm. It's schlock. And it's kind of, it's gross.
I always liked it because it was Corbin Burnson kind of slumming it, you know?
Corbin Burnson slumming it. It's gross.
Yeah.
Like, he's gross. It's the definition of a dirty movie. Like, it's sweaty, it's dirty, a lot of mouth shots. Like, Corbin Burnson's out of his mind, and I'm a big Psych fan.
Okay.
Right. So, like, seeing, you know, Henry as this psychopathic dentist is like,
I'm a big Major League fan, so
having said that, I'm gonna Major League this off. That was terrible. We gotta edit this out. That's the worst thing I've ever said.
That's just a terrible transition's not your strong suit though.
Never has been. Five years doing this with you guys, never has been.
That's okay. They're overrated. Overrated transitions.
All right. But no, this is perfect. You can find me and Brian both on Twitter at Shindinga1 and the Herskules, or Herskules, not the Herskules.
That's right, the Herskules, who knows who that is, probably no one, that's a terrible Twitter name, no one would take it.
And then you can find us all here at Flavor State of Film, Flavor State of Fear, and check out all of our back catalogs. Stay frightful, everyone.
Flyover State of Fear.